Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Hey, Bumblebee, I'm going out for a little bit. Cool. I'm going to go over to a friend's house. Just text me if you need anything.
Oh, I'm good, man. Thanks.
I'm on my way back. Oh,
thanks, Megatron.
Oh, I thought he'd never leave. All right, time for some good stuff. Oh, cheap-ass Megatron and his fucking dial-up. Oh, come on. Come on. All right, I'm in. All right. How about some from the vintage section? I like the older models. All right, here we go. Oh. Oh, hell yeah. Woo! Oh, they don't make them like that anymore. Oh. Yeah. Oh.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again! Say what again! I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
From the Lights Movie Podcast, Episode 2. Podcast. Jeff Lowe, Trill Ballins.
What's up?
Barstool Ken Jack. Week 35 of the movie season. And guys, we're going to change it up. Hey, thanks for listening, by the way, if you listened to Episode 1. More than one person listened, so that was a big start for us.
We had 14, when I looked yesterday, 14 five-star reviews.
I think we have 17 now.
Oh, that's phenomenal. Shit. Some of the reviews were smocking, so I'm not sure these people have even...
I'm not sure if they listened.
I don't think they listened to the podcast, but you do not have to listen to the podcast to give a review, which I don't know why I'm telling the audience this since they're listening to the podcast.
That's right. Some movie news from us. Let's start it out with Colin Trevorrow being fired from Star Wars Episode 9. Look, I'm pretty happy, but what's the immediate reaction from you guys before we get to some really good quotes about why he was fired?
I'm pretty happy with this. So when I first saw Jurassic World, I liked it. And then I watched it again, and it is the least rewatchable movie that I can think of, because then you start focusing on how dumb it is. I'm all Rian Johnson. I'm team Rian Johnson. I'm happy about this. I think he should continue on with what he's doing on The Last Jedi. And I'm making a huge leap of faith, assuming The Last Jedi is good. If not Rian Johnson, wait for this one. George Lucas.
Ooh.
George fucking Lucas. I don't know if I can say that, but I just did.
Do you think he would make a special edition of the movie immediately after the movie comes out? Because I feel like that he'd be all for that.
The movie, yeah. The movie would be Mark Hamill and Daisy Ridley standing in front of a green screen for 5 hours with I don't know where to take that joke.
And this one, every single that's all you needed right there. Actually Jar Jar Binks. Like it fades out and it's Jar Jar playing with a Star Wars snow globe. And that's where Star Wars is.
Like he controls the world, or like don't they do it at the end of Men in Black? It's like some alien controlling marbles, and that was the galaxy. Yeah. Yeah, bullshit like that.
It would just be George Lucas going to find and buy plaid shirts and light washed denim.
I think I'm personally happy about this. I think, and they keep saying like, oh, Kathleen Kennedy keeps firing people because she fired the guy off the Han Solo project as well. I'm happy with it. I'd rather them do it right or not do it at all, because obviously we see how it goes when you don't do it that way.
Exactly.
And this guy, I agree with Joel completely. I watched Jurassic Park the first time. See, I'm cosmic brain ahead of you. I watched it the first time and didn't like it immediately, because I walked out thinking, I don't know who anyone is. And I feel like I was just charmed by, because I love Chris Pratt too much, and I'm a huge Chris Pratt stan. And I didn't remember any character's name, and like the whole plot was just kind of revolved around dinosaur violence. And that's like his, like, I don't know, claim to fame. And I don't really want him anywhere near my most like beloved franchise.
Yeah, I don't remember any names in that movie at all. I do remember there was one scene where one of the little kids was crying because his parents were going to get divorced.
Yeah.
And they never revisited that. It was just I don't know why they talked about it. They never revisited that part of the movie.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Fallon. Welcome to the little hamster ball thing. I know Jimmy Fallon's right. One character from the movie. Right. Here's some other characters. Raptor Dan, Stegosaurus Steve, and Emily, the assistant, who got viciously murdered on screen for no point at all.
Yeah, the pterodactyl, whatever, just came down and like swooped her away. And that whole divorce subplot, which I'm pretty sure was featuring the guy from The Office, like the guy, the suck it guy. Whatever. He was like the dad, and the girl from SNL was like the mom, and like it served no purpose whatsoever to the film. All right, getting away from that.
Wait, I think the mom was Judy Greer.
Yeah, it was Judy Greer. Yeah, never mind, not from SNL. Okay. But yeah, getting away
Kitty
from that.
From Arrested Development and many other things. Yes. She's a good actress. Yeah, I think we're all pretty pleased, and I think we're all on the Rian Johnson thing. We see there's been some names floated out there. Ava DuVernay has been floated out there by J.J. Abrams. She helped J.J. Abrams make that scene from The Force Awakens where Rey touches a lightsaber. Like, that was her idea, so she has a little connection. Villeneuve, I think. I don't know how to say his name. The guy who did Arrival. He did Moon. He just did the new Blade Runner. But I actually hear some inside scoop, and by that I mean my coworker went to the screening and I didn't. He said Blade Runner was not good. So, if Blade Runner's bad, and we'll talk about Blade Runner here in a minute, about Jared Leto, if Blade Runner's bad, he's out. Because if you make a bad movie, you're out.
I agree with any decision Kathy Kennedy goes to make, because she has an awesome track record so far. So if she thinks that this guy sucks, then I agree he sucks. So fuck him.
You said he got fired for having too strong of opinions. And some of those opinions were, I think dinosaurs are still alive.
Yeah.
Which is just a fucked up opinion to have, because scientifically we know they're not.
So Trevorrow, you're out. We're Team Rian Johnson. If Rian Johnson becomes a director, he now bears the burden of casting Brendan Fraser, though.
You have to think how many Twitter followers does he have? It's really not that many for someone who's leading up the next major installment of the Star Wars franchise. So if we keep tweeting him with the picture of Brendan Fraser looking adorable in his First Order trooper outfit, he's going to see it. And it's going to be like The Secret, you know, where you just will an idea into existence.
This is our first call to action as a podcast, actually. We will tweet out on the day of release the photo of Brendan Fraser, and it says cast Brendan Fraser in episode 9. Tweet it at Rian Johnson, at the Star Wars account. Blow it up. Do it as much as you can, because we're going to get him cast in this movie. He's going to be back. From Star Wars to It, we're talking the massive opening for It. It broke every record, I think. It actually, on Friday, broke the opening weekend September record in one night. It beat out an Adam Sandler movie, Hotel Transylvania 2, owned the previous September opening weekend record. It beat it in one night of $50 million. It's basically going to double that. I saw it. I liked it. Pretty good movie. I didn't think it was the best horror movie of the year. I gave it an 85. It's enjoyable. The kids are really good. I don't want to talk too much about it, because I'm sure we'll talk about it when we all see it. But are you surprised that It did so well? I mean, it's like a weird movie in the sense that, yeah, it's a book as well, but people know it from that miniseries, which by all accounts is pretty shitty. Even the director of the miniseries came out and said it sucks.
I'm not surprised. Personally, I don't think they should have remade it. I felt Spielberg's original work with the original It was good when his finger lit up and he flew the bike over the moon. Like...
Oh. I never watched the original, so I completely defer to you guys. It was
Okay, let me reboot it. So Jeff, I'm not. We're just coming back from a joke that probably got cut.
That's staying in there. That's staying in there.
I'm not surprised it made that much money because this is probably the most well-known Stephen King property. Spielberg's coming off of a bad August with the Dark Tower release, which I don't think did as well as he would have liked. And now he's just raking it in here. I think horror's coming back. I think now we are going to be living in a golden age of horror movies because this has made a lot of money and kind of paved the way for high production value type movies. Now, Jeff, you mentioned you didn't think it was the best horror movie you saw this year. What would that be?
Get Out.
Bye Bye Man. Has to be, right?
the Bye Bye Man. Actually, yeah, the Bye Bye Man, I gave a 1 out of 100. But no, Get Out was the best horror movie I saw this year. Oh, yeah. It was because it was creative. And I guess it's not really fair to rag on it because it wasn't as creative because it's coming from source material. It just didn't blow me away in terms of creativity. It's fairly cookie cutter. But every element in the movie is great. That clown sucks. That is a scary-ass clown, man. I hate clowns. And they did a great job. Dylan Skarsgård play Dylan? No, Dylan sounds like
no,
his
it's
father.
Not Dylan.
It's Dylan Skarsgård's son plays it.
Kyle?
I'll get it at some point. He plays it. Pennywise is scary as shit in this movie. The other forms he takes are nuts. The kids are great, like I said before, which is pretty cool when you think about it. We rag on the Phantom Menace all the time because of Jake Lloyd and how bad he is. They couldn't even cast one kid. This movie cast multiple teenagers and kids. So pretty cool. And I'm also glad it beat out Hotel Transylvania 2 and 1, which owned the top two spots for September openings. But it's Bill Skarsgård, by the way.
Yes.
That's the name. Dylan Skarsgård's son.
I love horror movies. There's just not many good ones ever.
Get Out was awesome.
Get Out was great, but Get Out was kind of an anomaly because it was just such a fresh and unusual idea. And it was also very well done. So not only did they take an idea that was exceptional, they made a good movie on it. Most horror movies are, we'll get into this.
Bye Bye Man.
So most horror movies, and maybe we can transition into this, are like The Purge, Jeff.
Yeah, so let's talk about The Purge, because some other news we have here is The Purge 4 details being revealed by the writer. He says it takes place on Staten Island, which is cool. Okay.
Staten Island is the new Williamsburg.
And he says it's the first experimental Purge, so that's what the movie's going to be about. It's going to be about the first time they did The Purge.
It's going to be two roommates in college just fucking coming home at 2 a.m. Just fucking getting a little experimental. kind of learning themselves and shit.
These movies, I don't despise them, but I was incredibly let down with the first one because, again, I don't like horror movies for the most part. And I'm like, this is a pretty cool idea. This doesn't sound like it's going to be a slasher. And it just didn't live up to what I thought it would be. It was, I don't know, because maybe they stayed in one house and it was predictable. But the idea, the concept of The Purge as a movie, I still think is cool. But this is the fourth one now, so there's a little fatigue even if they do get it right.
The first one, they made them into more slasher movies. So the first one, if I recall, was mainly within that house, right?
Yeah.
And then they went out and kind of made them more expansive and violent, I would have to say. Now, Purge Election Year was the last one, and I did like that a lot because there was a lot of fucking violence in it, and I'm down with that shit. So I don't mind another Purge, but I also have to say this. I probably won't see it unless it's uploaded into 60 separate clips on YouTube.
I completely agree with Troll that, like, and well, more Jeff, because I think it's in concept, it's really, really awesome, but in execution, it kind of sucks. Like anything casting Ethan Hawke, that was the first one, right? Ethan Hawke?
Yeah.
Where I'm usually very hesitant on. I'm like, all right, well, now I have like 50% lowered expectation on it. But so anything, the concept's really cool. I didn't like either of them too much. I didn't watch, there's a third one I didn't even know, but I didn't watch that one.
That's Election Year is the third one.
Yeah, I didn't watch that one, but I saw the trailers for it. Didn't look great, but
it wasn't. But like I said, I like these horror movies. I like trash movies. They're entertaining. But again, I think the audience for these movies are teenagers. I feel like
yeah,
and,
yeah.
And yeah, they go to that and they go to the movie and you know, fucking text their multi-faced emojis to each other and shit. Like, I just don't like understand it. So they'll go see this and it'll probably make a lot of money and it'll probably fucking suck. Shout out to Purge 4.
Go see it next year, July 4th.
All right, next up, 50 Shades Freed. The third installment in the 50 Shades of Grey series. The new trailer for the third movie just dropped. We all watched it. Guys, give me your thoughts. All right, thank you.
So let's move on now to Blade Runner 2049, releasing very soon. And Blade Runner 2049 has a actor in it by the name of Jared Leto, who most of you should know as a pretty intense method actor. Well, he's back at it again, as it came out that Jared Leto had special contacts that made him blind like his character for the entire movie. Now, that's not the most famous thing he's done. He sent like some really messed up shit when he was filming Suicide Squad as a Joker, like used condoms and dead rats and stuff. And he like, I think he even denied it. He did some screwed up stuff. And Dallas Buyers Club, he got into character too, which is great. I mean, you know, with Daniel Day-Lewis retiring, we need one of these nutcase, you know, really in the zone method actors. But Jared Leto, these techniques are getting pretty out there, huh?
Every time Jared Leto shows up in public, he looks like he's doing Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. he wears like a purple robe and his hair is down. He looks, I mean, one of the best looking men, I have to say, on film right now. However, I just want Jared Leto to take more steps into method acting going in the future. If he has to play someone who breaks their legs, just break your legs. Like, go for it, Jared. Like, you've already tried to be sick and twisted with a Joker. Now you're trying to be blind, which actually I think makes sense playing a blind character, because I know Jamie Foxx, I think he wore something over his eyes when he was doing Ray. Yeah. I don't see how you could act that role without like having your vision, you know, impaired by something, because it just would be, you know, stuff would catch your eye and you'd move and react.
Yeah, I'm a huge, personally a big Jared Leto acting fan. I liked him in American Psycho, even Rec Room for a Dream, which is kind of shitty. I thought he was pretty good in. The only movie I think I didn't like him in was Chapter 27, where he was Mark David Chapman, the guy who kills Leno. It's kind of shitty.
Kills Lennon?
Yes, John Lennon.
Hey, have you heard about this?
He killed Jay Leno. Have you heard about this guy?
Have you folks seen about this? Mark David Chapman, what are you doing with this gun? I'm driving my car down the street. Have you heard about this?
Should I redo that part?
No, you're not. No, you get no out on that one.
Oh fuck! All right.
Wait, what? Did we just really transition to a Smokin joke? What's his band member's name that you always reference when you do the Smokin tweet?
Oh, Kevin Eubanks.
Kevin, you heard this one? You heard this one, Kevin?
This one? Have you guys heard this guy?
Have you heard about this? And Kevin's like, he does a guitar slide. It's like,
I haven't heard it.
And then Jay does his head bobble when the camera. Jay Leno. I mean, Ken Jack, I don't blame you, because we're talking about Jared Leto. We're talking about John Lennon. About Jay Leno in one conversation. So
it's a lot. And like, we also called back to Lord of War earlier, which is another movie I like that he's in. Also, Mr. Nobody and also Suicide Squad. Very bad movie. I think his personal acting in it wasn't terrible. It was just like, you could tell a lot of it was cut out.
He was 75%. Yeah. He was not happy from all accounts.
Did he win the Oscar for Dallas Buyers Club, the supporting actor? I still can't believe McConaughey fucking won an Oscar. Like, what a world. If Stallone would have won for Apollo, and you would have had Matthew McConaughey and Sylvester Stallone be Academy Award winning actors. I love that shit. I would rather see that happen than them give it to
the guy from The Artist.
Well, that's why I wanted Michael Keaton to win. Come on, Mr. Mom and Batman winning an Oscar.
Is there an acting equivalent of steroids? Are these older actors who you would consider to be washed up juicing, like mentally, to make themselves?
Michael Keaton might be juicing. I don't know.
He's killing it. He's taking neurotropics, Batman mindset type shit.
Our number one consumer is Michael Keaton. He buys nootropics every single day. He also subscribes to the Gorilla Mindset.
No, in 1989, Batman didn't have nipples. But then, in 1997, Batman and Robin Batman had nipples.
So Blade Runner 2049 coming out soon. Again, I've heard it's not great. I hope it is because I like the original. And hey, I'm a Harrison Ford guy. So.
If it was 2069, it would be pretty nice.
Nice. Finally, let's get to something that has me, as you could say, triggered. It's had me triggered for many years now. And that is Morgan Spurlock's Super Size Me, the movie that took down McDonald's and made them get rid of their Super Size items. And, well, basically, there's a new one, Super Size Me 2, Holy Chicken, debuted at the Toronto Film Festival. And this one is more a behind-the-counter type thing. The Super Size Me was from the mindset of the consumer. Now this one's from the mindset of, you know, the fast food chains themselves. Not a lot of great reviews, but thoughts on Super Size Me and how it ruined everything. And, you know, I bet Morgan Spurlock, probably a pretty good guy. He can come on the pod and discuss. But I hate his movies because it took away the Super Size Fry.
First off, they really screwed up the name. Super Size Me, Holy Chicken should be Super Size Me 2, Big Time Clucked.
Nice. That's pretty good, yeah.
And second off, I don't want to know any more about how my food gets made. I already know I'm doing a bad thing for my body. You don't need to tell me that. I don't need to be babysat, Morgan Spurlock. So, no, I will not see your film.
Yeah, I agree. Also, I would say I would want to rename it Super Size Me 2, The Cluckening is what I would go with. And I will also not be watching your shit movie because I also know what's in my food and I know it's all garbage and I don't want to watch the same exact thing, more or less, except from the, I guess, producer's point of view.
I'm reading the description here. It says, Spurlock goes cluck raking, as it were, to expose the dark meat size of the chicken consumption by starting his own restaurant.
Oh.
A Hollywood Reporter with two poultry puns, but they did make a promise for no more poultry puns, which is hard to say.
As long as they don't do this about Wendy's, I'm very good. Like, because I never really eat McDonald's either for the most part. I'm more of a, I'd say, a high-key Wendy's and Checkers guy for the most part. So as long as they don't mention either of those franchises in any way or sense, like, go ahead. Like, go to town, Morgan Spurlock.
Well, actually, Ken Jack, Wendy's used to have a biggie size. Do you remember that?
They did.
Yeah.
You pulled that one out.
I'm just going to correct everybody on podcast, make my co-hosts like me.
Do because I don't know what you're
There was a biggie size. How about
there
that?
Was.
I forgot that word.
So they got rid of that. They got rid of the biggie size when everything, like, it is kind of weird how basically in the 90s, you just market with like Super Size and Biggie Size, essentially your fat fuck size. Like, and people are like, yeah, I'll have the Biggie Size. Give me that.
That's your news of the week. More news next week. But for now, we need to talk about Transformers, The Last Night. However, we're a podcast. We're in episode 2. We've grown up a little bit. We have some commercials here. You know, we got to pay the bills. So we have a quick commercial break. And when we come back, Transformers, The Last Night. Review. Is it the best movie of the year?
No!
We'll find out.
Man, this war with Megatron is wearing me out.
Hey there, Optimus. I'm Brian. I'm a brand manager here at my protein-packed company. You look like you need a boost.
Yes, I'm losing power. I need my skills and abilities for fighting Megatron to be strong.
Might I suggest to you this refreshing pint of low-cal Halobot ice cream?
Ice cream? You want me to eat ice cream?
Well, not just any ice cream. Halobot. It's packed with 21 grams of protein, energy boosters, and incredible flavor. Best of all, Optimus, it's just 300 calories for the entire pint.
Holy shit, the whole pint?
Yep. Here. Try our new chocolate chip flavor. Get your protein and head back into battle.
Wow, thank you. I need to try it now. What the fuck? This tastes like shit.
Well, yeah, we know.
This literally does not taste anything like ice cream.
It's not just ice cream. It's Halobot.
Halobot ice cream. Yeah. We know.
Thanks to our sponsor,
Halo Bot ice cream. Let's get right into it. Transformers 5, The Last Night. We're going to review it, talk about what we didn't like, talk about what we liked, which I don't think we liked anything. We're not going to touch on the egregious product placement because, you know, we don't really want to draw too much light to that. So we're just going to ignore the product placement completely. We're going to talk about everything else we didn't like. I know I think we all combined to have watched Transformers The Last Night, like 6 or 7 times?
Too many times.
It's not worth watching it once. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. This movie sucks.
It sucks really badly. And per usual, at the top here, we're going to warn you about spoilers. And it's not going to be a review where we talk about non-spoiler stuff and then we tell you which time to skip ahead to, because partly it's so bad it doesn't matter. And also, I don't think most of us understood the movie. It's pretty hard to understand.
It was kind of like a disjointed plot completely. Like, it didn't, like, top to bottom throughout it, I think all of us had that same experience where we were just like, this doesn't make sense at any point in time.
When I was watching it, I was following along with the Wikipedia, like one of those sing-alongs with the bouncing ball, because I just did not know what the hell was going on. I had to look up all the characters. There are a billion characters in this movie. The plot doesn't make any sense. And here's the kicker. It's 2 hours and 30 minutes long.
Yeah, it is a long fucking... I mean, it is the Cloud Atlas of Transformer movies. It is really tough.
You speak the true.
So quickly, we'll go over plot. I don't want to dive too deep into this because, again, it doesn't make much sense. It starts out with Merlin and King Arthur, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Merlin is played by the Tucci man, the Tucci god himself, Stanley Tucci.
Who was in a Transformers movie before.
But a different role this time. So,
but a different character.
Right off the bat, the Transformers universe is really messing with its own continuity, which I'm sure he will talk about more later.
I think we should note too that he's drunk Merlin. He's not like your standard edition Merlin. Like, he's like stumbling drunk, like magician Merlin.
Michael Bay's like, look, listen here, Tucci. You can't play this like a normal Merlin. You got to be a drunk Merlin.
And he's basically like drunk Job from like Arrested Development.
He plays like Merlin in a scary movie type movie. Like, it's like a joke Merlin. And it doesn't fit the period at all in the movie because all the other medieval characters are pretty serious. And he's just this goof talking to a really ancient Transformer.
I think it was his first line of dialogue. Like, they pan to him and he's like, I'm absolutely sloshed, and he like takes a nip of wine,
and then it cuts back like 7 times to King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table fighting the battle, and every time it cuts back they're like, where's Merlin, where is he? And then it cuts back to Merlin just drinking.
And he promises the ancient Transformer that if, and this rolls into the plot, he's trying to get a staff or a weapon to help his side defeat the enemy. And he promises to like not drink again. And then he stops short when he says, I won't, you know, go after women anymore. So right off the bat, they even found a way to take something so old and medieval and make it that real stupid Transformer joke vibe. It goes on from there to the present day. You meet this young girl who is in the movie for about 20 minutes and then disappears till the end. You meet her, you see Mark Wahlberg. He's still kind of moving around, bebopping around, helping Transformers out. His daughter is not in the movie in this movie because I'm sure it's because Nicola Peltz didn't want to be in the movie. He has this secret ancient coin called the Talisman that goes and wraps around his arm. And that leads him to Anthony Hopkins, who is going after this other character. I think her name is Laura Haddock. I don't know. Yeah, she's the next really attractive person in these movies, and she can't get a guy, of course, which makes no sense at all. Her and Mark Wahlberg team up with Anthony Hopkins, and they got to figure out how to save the world for Megatron, who's trying to end it, and then Optimus Prime is bad for 5 seconds, and they fight some evil witch who doesn't look like a Transformer. And you really just fast forward to the end. They save the day. I mean, no shit. That's what happens. And like all the other ones, the world is coming to an end. And then out of nowhere, the little girl comes back again. And and help save the day for reasons, again, like she snuck on the ship. It just doesn't, it doesn't make much sense. I mean, look, it's damsel in distress teams up with the guy. Then there's another character, like a kind of out there character. Like in the first one, it was, you know, John Turturro's character, and this one is Anthony Hopkins. So Turturro's back. And they go and defeat Megatron and all this shit. And guess what? There's going to be another one. And I mean, again, it doesn't make any fucking sense. And that's my real issue with it. I couldn't draw the plot out. If you offered me $100 and said, write or draw the plot out, you have 30 minutes, I would just say, keep your money. I have no shot at it.
This movie is so unreasonably dense. At every second of it, something is happening. A new character is being introduced. Another character exits the screen. And like you said, you don't see him again for the rest of the movie until they pop up and help save the day. There's a lot going on. And for so much going on, it just makes so little sense. It's the perfect movie for somebody who is looking to go into a theater for 2 hours and 30 minutes, remove their brain and not think about anything, which is what some people are looking for. And I think this is why these things keep making money. But at the end of the day, it's not good. It's not fun. Is what it comes back to for me. The first one was fun. Maybe the second one, yeah. I stopped watching after this, but now it just seems like a chore to watch. And there's just so much going on that when you can't even keep up with it, it makes you hate watch it rather than just, I'm going to enjoy this, even though I know it's a bad movie.
I think the biggest thing I liked about the first few Transformers is like the abundance of like super huge robot fights. And I don't think we get an actual Transformer fight until like the 2 hour mark. And like the rest of it is just robot or like Transformer versus human.
I think
human.
There's a chase scene early.
Yeah, it's like a skirmish
on,
and like back off.
Yeah.
Like,
but it's not real action. And we'll get into it more, but I mean these movies have slowly become human movies that have Transformers in them, as opposed to where there were always Transformers around. In at least the first one. So we're going to get to our scores, but first we have to take a quick commercial break for an ad from our sponsor.
My name is Megatron. I am Megatron, and I'm here to kill robots. My name is Megatron, and I like to drink Diet Pepsi all day. My name is Megatron. My name is Megatron. My name is Megatron. My name is Megatron. Tron, Tron.
Whoa, thank you, Pepsi, for that informative message. You guys, I think it's impressive that this is already our second episode, and we have these great advertisers on board with us. What do you think?
The way they integrate too is quite impressive.
Synergy.
If we hadn't have noted that was a commercial break, I think people would have thought it was really flowing well with the show. So pretty good stuff. Let's roll right into scores now. Out of 100, we all rated our movies pretty terribly. I think I had the lowest. I gave it a 3 out of 100. It did not get any points for pacing. I gave it a base 0. I gave it a point for some music, because the music in these movies is actually pretty good. I think it scored pretty well. The animation is impressive. It's too much, but I'm not going to take away from the fact that it is impressive stuff. And honestly, I don't give a shit what my last point was for. I forgot. I don't care anymore to go back. It's a 3 out of 100. That's all I know. It's slightly better than the Emoji Movie, because there's a bit of a purpose here, I think. I don't know, and it's not shameful like the Emoji Movie is. It's just hard to get through. It's an actual headache. I had a headache when I stopped watching this movie, so I gave it a whopping 3 out of 100.
I gave it a solid 5. None for pacing, none for anything really from a cinematic enjoyment standpoint. The CGI was kind of cool, like you were saying. That was definitely overdone. Like, there's no need for it to have like John Goodman's robot to have a beard. Or like a cigar or anything. The score was good, but just way too long is my biggest problem with it. And also way too bad. Like, I know it's kind of like a broad statement, but you can't be that bad in a movie and still be good. Shout out Trent Dilfer.
Shout out Trent Dilfer. That's the first, but not the last shout out to Trent Dilfer on this movie podcast. I gave it a 5 out of 100. Not a good score. 1 point for just being a movie. And the rest of the 4 points, really, it's well done visually. I think the CGI work was fine. The battles were entertaining. The Arthur Merlin battle at the start. Then there's another historical battle that happens halfway through the movie. And it looked good. But you mentioned pacing, Ken Jack, and there were cuts in this movie that made it feel like I was watching a highlight clip on YouTube where something would just cut over to something else. And I felt like I just missed out 3 minutes of dialogue somewhere. It feels like work. Watching this movie felt like work, and therefore it wasn't a good experience for me. I know the rest of the series have been successful, but I think at this point it's just a novelty and I'm not buying it.
Let's get into why we hated it. However, we have one more commercial break here. On the other side, we will get into the things that pissed us off about Transformers the last night.
Optimus, we're pinned down. Where's that new recruit you were talking about? Don't worry. Here he comes now. Autobots, let me introduce you to our newest team member, a Boeing 747 Spirit.
Top of the morning to you, fellas.
Spirit. You're 4 hours late.
Yeah, sorry there, Optimus. We got delayed at the gate. Now, before I can get into action, we have to talk about some of your fees.
What are you talking about? We are under fire.
Okay there, first we have the non-refundable ticket change fee, the same day change
God
fee,
damn it, what were you thinking, Optimus?
Phone fee,
you don't do the budget, John.
Fee, the itinerary change.
Spirit Airlines, we may not be the best.
Thank you, Spirit Airlines, for that informative message. So now we're going to move into some of the things we truly hated about Transformers. The biggest thing I think I might have hated about this movie is the random jumps throughout time. I did not like them going back in time to Merlin. I didn't like them showing Bumblebee fighting Nazis and like assaulting the Third Reich High Command. Call me a simpleton. I like my Transformers just to have giant robot fights in present day. So I think the next biggest part I hated was the dramatic slow motion polo scene with the female protagonist. There's like a full, like probably 1 minute, 2 minute long sequence where it's just the female lead just literally playing polo with like the really dramatic score playing. And then she like hits it in. I don't know how polo works, but she scores and then like she falls. And again, don't forget, this is like a drop dead gorgeous model. Her like coworker or something comes up and he's like, no wonder you can't hold down a man.
And that scene served to tell the viewer that the movie was now in England because it was very British. And then immediately she pulls up in a very British looking car and she goes into a very British looking museum. So it hits you over the head with the fact that the movie's now in England.
And it just, the slow motion kills me in this movie. Unproven study, but I can almost guarantee if they removed all slow motion, like if you were to go edit and speed up the slow motion scenes, this movie would drop from 2 hours and 30 minutes down to 2 hours because there is so much f-ing slow motion that it's just, again, it's a headache. It's a headache to watch this movie. And I know that sounds incredibly dramatic, but watch this movie if you haven't already and your head will be ringing when it's over. It's the loudest movie I've ever seen in my life. And not in a sense that the explosions are loud. Like Dunkirk was a loud movie. This movie is just loud nonstop with so many sound effects. It's like they just scrubbed the sound effect database and then clicked select all and just threw it into the track on post-production.
And part of that is they'll cut over to, they have like the weird little comic relief Transformers, and they'll cut over to those and they'll be making shrill high-pitched noises, like interacting with each other. And it's so grating. You're right.
I think the last two scenes I really hated would be the checkpoint scene. Which
do you want to get into the racist issues with this movie? Because there are some.
There are a few. The number one would be the checkpoint scene where he pulls up to like the check or like the, it's like a police stop before he gets, Mark Wahlberg gets to his like secret lair slash also junkyard, and the police chief is like Native American, and Mark Wahlberg says, "Hey, what's going on, chief?" And he's like, "I don't like it when you call me chief." He's like, My name is Sherman.
And Wahlberg's fucking Sherman.
Yeah. And he's like, it sounds racist coming from you. And it's like, it's really unself-aware.
I mean, there's a samurai robot with a thick Japanese accent. There's a French robot, too, who has a really deep, thick French accent, and actually explains at one point that he doesn't know why he speaks that way.
The samurai robot was also a Mercedes-Benz, which is a German car, and it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And he has a giant Mercedes-Benz logo on his chest, too. One of the more egregious examples of product placement in a movie that went out of its way to show, I think it was a NASA engineer using a Chinese mobile phone and a Chinese social network in terms of product placement overseas.
It's classic Universal. The last like big scene I really hated was the introduction of Nemesis Prime. So not one to bury the lead. Optimus Prime like lands in like the circle among all the other Transformers. And like he does like the Superman jump and he looks up and he just goes, I am Nemesis Prime.
Which, because he had just been renamed. He'd been renamed by the ultimate villain in this movie, because Megatron, which I feel like Megatron is never the ultimate villain. I think he was in the last one and the first one, but there's always a higher villainous power. And her name was Quintessa, and she is the creator of the Transformers. She renamed Optimus Prime Nemesis Prime to become the villain.
It was just like blatant showing the exposition. Like they already showed that his name was now Nemesis Prime when he was talking to Quintessa, but now like he just like looks up and goes, I am Nemesis Prime. And it's just like, there's no need for that at all.
That was a huge, I guess, marketing point for the movie, was that he was gonna fight Bumblebee. Optimus Prime was gonna fight Bumblebee, and he's evil now, which it was another rip of Batman Superman. But the fight lasted for, I don't know, it couldn't have lasted for longer than 1 minute on screen, and then he's good again. And they marketed it to be a huge fight, which kind of would have been cool. I would have been okay with that, like a nice long fight between now Nemesis Prime and Bumblebee. But no, it only lasted a few seconds, and you got ripped off.
I think the very last big scene I hated from the movie was at the very, very end when Optimus like blasts off to go to the final fight. He says, like, I need to defend the only planet that has called me home. Meanwhile, like, the very opening narration for the movie is Anthony Hopkins saying, Transformers have been declared illegal. Like,
they've never liked him. Nobody but Shia LaBeouf has ever liked Optimus, him and Mark Wahlberg.
Like, they got illegal by virtue of existing, and, like, he's saying that our planet is calling him home. Like, you know, we don't, like, no, obviously no one here wants you. Like, I don't know if that's your main motivation, but we should probably do some like introspection.
What do you think Anthony Hopkins like thought when he saw that line in the script, which I'm sure he didn't read before he got the money for doing this movie?
He saw the money and said, yep, I don't give a shit. Sign me up.
A former but he won an Academy Award for Best Actor, and he has to say Transformers are declared illegal as part of this opening exposition. So dumb.
Well, remember when Transformers and these movies were actually Transformers? They looked like the things they transformed from. And now, yes. Jack, you mentioned it. You said the John Goodman Tron. He is literally played by John Goodman. He has a f-ing beard and smokes a cigar. And then there's Steve Buscemi-tron, who's like a dumpster diver, has a backpack. Again, they used to look pretty good in the original movies. Like, you could tell what they transformed from. But now they're just robots that have some car parts on them.
The John Goodman character was just recycled assets from the creation of Small Soldiers.
Yeah.
They just used the CGI framework for him, because he's just a complete stereotype of like what a 13-year-old would think a 1950s type military character would be.
Well, there's a character in that movie that smokes a cigar. I think it's Nick Nitro, the Gorgonites versus the Commando Elite.
That's one of my favorite parts, was John Goodman, like when they're in his secret lair, just throwing around like bombs and shit at people. He's like, oh, cluster bomb.
Yeah.
When they do transform, it's like it's almost one time a movie. And it's when they come in onto the scene, and while they're transforming out, it'll be a slow-mo into their full form, and you'll never see them use their car form again.
Steve Buscemi's character, Transformer, was named Day Trader.
Because he literally traded during the day. But he wasn't like a stock trader, right? He didn't day trade. He just literally traded
scrap.
And he really wanted that talisman, which made the viewer immediately know it was something special because Steve Buscemi wanted it.
Yes, he wanted it really badly. And that was the biggest, I think, MacGuffin in the movie was the talisman, because it was there to service the plot. And it's never been talked about in Transformers movies. It's a coin that links like Laura Haddock's character with Merlin, who she's a descendant of. And I guess she's a descendant of Merlin, and Mark Wahlberg's character, Cade, is a Witwicken or something. Like the Witwickens were a part of...
It's so stupid.
Part of an ancient order.
And Sam Witwicky was the original Transformer character, Shia LaBeouf's character. So they're just like, oh, he's related to them. I mean, my God.
Yeah, like the Witwickens were a part of the Knights of the Round Table with the Trans, because the Transformers were part of the Knights of the Round Table, which doesn't sound ridiculous saying. And Sam Witwicky's picture, Shia LaBeouf's, is in Anthony Hopkins' lair that shows all the past Witwickens. So it's, you said it, Trill, it's very dense. It's a dense plot.
The last thing I really hated about this movie, hated it. I did not like how horny the robots were. There was a scene with the French-speaking Lamborghini, I believe it was. It doesn't make any sense, but that Lamborghini character starts hitting on Laura Haddock when Cade and Anthony Hopkins' character are all talking to them. And I'm just not really into that whole, like, objectifying the female lead by using the French Transformer car to do it. It just feels really, really weird. Now, I know there are certain subgroups on the internet that like cars put into that role. I'm just not one of them.
Well, there's also the little Transformer who was a Decepticon that turns into an Autobot, Wheelie. He appeared in the second movie and starts humping Megan Fox's leg at one point.
Was it Mohawk, right?
I think that's the movie or the first one where the Witwickies, their dogs, have sex the whole movie.
I swear to you, we came up with a structure for this podcast, but as we go on, it starts to piss us off more and more, and it's harder for me to maintain these thoughts in my head of how much I hate the movie. I just have to diarrhea it out on this podcast right now. I'm sorry, guys.
There's two things that I hate. One of them I know we all hate. My first thing is that this movie pulls a lot from Star Wars, and that's not just us because we're big Star Wars fans. There's literally a Rey character, a girl in a junkyard who has no parents and has a little robot a little cute robot that follows her around. Sounds like Rey in BB-8. There are ships that look exactly like TIE fighters. And there's a C-3PO character who is, I think, the character I hate the most.
Cogman.
Yeah, Cogman.
Hello. I am Cogman. I'm a robot butler who also has murderous tendencies, which are played for laughs. Violence is funny.
Cogman is a Transformer, but he's like a human-sized robot and has... It's just a human in robot form. It looks nothing like all the other Transformers.
It's not even technically a Transformer, right? Because he doesn't turn into anything. He just stays human. I don't think he turns into like a car or something.
Yeah, I don't know what the f*** it is. I really don't. Is it a Transformer?
He's one of those street performers who paint themselves all silver. How much time do you think was spent trying to explain to Mark Wahlberg that the character's name was Cogman and not Cockman?
Oh, look, it's a Cockman. And you have to like a really deep box.
Mark. There's Cockman over there. Fucking Cockman. Cockman.
The Star Wars ripoff thing irritated me, but there's another movie that it rips off big time, and that is Suicide Squad. Because if you're going to rip a movie off, rip off a shitty movie from last year. They have a whole scene, and this is after a negotiation in the desert between lawyers and Megatron. Megatron negotiates with lawyers to get some of his friends to be released from Transformer Decepticon jail because Josh Duhamel's character talks with the military and they think that they can follow Megatron and his team to the end of the world Holy Grail type thing that he's chasing and then save the world. So he negotiates with them, and in the middle of the negotiations,
they show the characters that Megatron is asking for to be released, and they do it in a montage reminiscent of Suicide Squad, where they'll say some sort of quippy one-liner, and then it will freeze frame, the name will come on screen, and there might be like a fact or two or something about them, but there's just some ridiculous Decepticons they show. I think one of them might say, I your mom or something. I don't actually know for sure. Is that what he says?
The horny robots. I'm telling you, they need to stop with the horny robots.
But the scene where they have the montage of Decepticons, there's a couple characters they show. One is Nitro Zeus.
Yeah.
There's also, I think, Onslaught. There's a Mohawk, one named Mohawk that literally has a Mohawk. I'm not sure what car part that's out of. These are also pretty racist hip-hop robots as well, that they have actual gold chains around their neck.
Yep.
Again, not sure what part of the car that's from.
Yeah. I actually kind of like that like part in the Suicide Squad 2, like one of the few enjoyable parts of the movie, when like they're introducing everybody and showing their powers and shit. But to just show like a robot being like, hey, scientist, I fucked your wife, like... it didn't do it for me. Didn't get the juices flowing.
And another one of the robots points out to the police guards that are guarding him in Decepticon jail that they cheated on each other's wives or some shit like that. There's so many sex jokes in that scene.
A lot of cucking jokes.
Yeah.
The last cuck.
Nitro Zeus!
What was the name of the one that like they absolutely refused during the detente to release? Like they're like, no, we can't release him. And he had like a really like just dumbass name, like Apocalypse Tron.
The interrogation scene and the Suicide Squad-esque montage were pretty horrible. Those were my two main things that we haven't covered yet that I really don't like. I mean, it really is never ending with this movie because so much of it is just insufferable.
What about The Watch? Do we want to talk about The Watch?
We have not even talked about The Watch That Kills Hitler. Yes. I'm going to let The Watch That Kills Hitler, I'm going to let Ken Jack take that because I know you fucking love that one.
Ken Jack, the honor is yours.
So that was definitely probably my overall favorite part of the entire movie. Again, tying back into my hatred of their tried callbacks to the Transformers throughout history, which, again, later on in this podcast, we'll talk about how it like contradicts everything in Transformers canon, if you have such a thing. But one of the things Anthony Hopkins brings to the table is this watch that apparently killed Hitler, as if like you didn't like the giant Transformers, which they already show fight in World War II, couldn't do it. They needed to like infiltrate and give this like dumbass, like whatever pocket watch to Hitler. And like it turns out being like a big plot point of the movie. Like Anthony Hopkins later needs to like, go to the British PM and request assistance from him. So he brings the watch that killed Hitler with him, and he's like, you guys don't want to let go of this watch, do you, fellows? This is the watch that killed Hitler.
I think you have a Ken Jack, a deleted scene of Anthony Hopkins' character talking about other devices that have killed famous people in the past. Is that right?
Yes. Roll clip.
You must be careful. That's the watch that killed Hitler.
Oh, whoa, really?
Wow.
And that's the pen that killed Stalin.
Oh, whoa.
And that's the cock ring that killed Elvis.
Oh, God. What the fuck?
So, yeah, thank you to our Hollywood connections for providing us with that informative deleted scene.
That's pretty great. That's an exclusive clip, too.
Yeah, you ESPN, you cannot use this except for Darren Revelle. You have full rights.
Yeah, Revelle can use it.
Come on the podcast, Revelle. Come on the show.
But yeah, it brings up the question, like, if the Transformers have been around for this long and are intervening in human history for like all these huge events, specifically to Hitler, why did they not kill Hitler sooner? Like they waited till 1945 after like humans had already done all the work. It makes no sense beyond, again, everything in this movie really doesn't make too much sense. But there's so many events throughout history where they could have intervened and were just like, nah, we'll let them play things out unless we want to intervene. Such as World War II, where Bumblebee is murdering Nazis and the Watch is killing Hitler.
We have to talk about one more thing, and that is the mass amount of continuity errors in this movie that contradict all the past movies. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break. You're listening to the Lights, Camera, Podcast.
Earth, a planet where communication is necessary for survival. And that is why the Autobots, along with our friend Paul, use Verizon.
Not anymore.
Wait, you're shitting me. What did you switch to?
Sprint's reliability is now within 1% of Verizon.
Sprint? You switched to Sprint? Nobody uses Sprint. That's incredible. We have this whole plan with Verizon. What are we supposed to do now?
Sprint will save you a ton.
That's very impressive. We pay a lot of money for Verizon, and I don't even get good reception when we go visit Mark Wahlberg.
Can you hear that?
Yes, I can hear that now. I'm going to have to switch to Sprint. Let me redo my message here. I am Optimus Prime, and I send this message to any Autobot still using Verizon among the stars. Don't let a 1% difference in network reliability cost you twice as much. Switch to Sprint today.
You know, the network reliability is within 1%. Why pay more for 1%?
Did you know you can stream all 5 Transformers movies using the unlimited data from Sprint? It's quite impressive.
I mostly use it to watch Transformers porn, but to each his own.
Oh, no.
Do not cuck me again.
Please don't cuck my wife.
So the last thing we want to get to here before our closing thoughts, continuity errors, things that contradict past Transformers movies. Let's start off with how long Transformers have been on Earth. Apparently since Merlin was around, because as far as we knew from the first one, it was around the time they built the Hoover Dam. That's when Sam Witwicky's grandfather found Megatron, and they built the Hoover Dam around the cube, and they brought Megatron to the Hoover Dam. And I don't know. That's like where they – that's as far back as Transformers history went. And the next movie, they realized it had been there since really cars were first invented. So it was when vehicles first came around, that's when Transformers came into play. And now it's all the way back to Merlin. So I guess that might not be the strongest contradiction, but it's a continuity error because it continues to go further and further back in time with every movie.
Same series of movies too, which is infuriating. It's not like it's a reboot. It's the same series by the same director.
Yeah, and that's the thing I just don't get, is that they want to build this Transformers universe, of course, because now everything has to be a connected universe, but none of it really lines up. Bumblebee fighting in World War II. What? I mean, none of that was even mentioned. Bumblebee was an unknown character in the first one, really, to at least the government, but apparently he was closely involved with the killing of Hitler. It's things that they just shoehorned in there just to service the plot and be kind of cool, I guess, and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I'd like to say that it was very disrespectful to the troops when Optimus Prime absolutely laid out Bumblebee as a former U.S. Army soldier.
Michael Bay definitely does not give a fuck at this point.
No, he doesn't. And there's more that really proves it. We'll get to the last. The last one is the biggest one for me. Starscream, Megatron's minion, his head was pulverized in the last movie. He was blown up. I mean, his head is in perfect condition as Steve Buscemi-tron pulls it out of his large backpack and shows it off for everybody. Fan service, I believe, is what we can call that one. Then Earth, this is a huge spoiler alert, by the way, so turn off the podcast, I guess, if you care at this point. Earth is a Transformer. We learned that in this movie. Earth, which has been a planet that all the villains in this movie have wanted to blow up, is actually the Transformer Unicron. Who knew? Apparently not the screenwriters until this movie, because it's a brand new thing that happens, that Earth is not actually Earth. It is a Transformer, and they all learn that, which is mind-blowing. Megatron left the last movie as Galvatron. That is not referenced once. He's just back to being Megatron. Final one. During the fake nonsense battle between Bumblebee and Optimus Prime, who at the time is Nemesis Prime, Bumblebee, who has not talked since the final scenes of the first movie when he temporarily got his voice back, he has not talked with his regular voice. He talks through the radio with movie quotes and TV quotes and lyrics. He says something, much like when Superman says Martha in Batman Superman and stops Batman in his tracks. Why did you say that name? Optimus hears Bumblebee say like Optimus's name with his regular voice, and it snaps Optimus out of it. He's no longer Nemesis Prime, and he says, It's the first time I've heard that voice in so many years. And that's what saves him. That is bullshit, because he hears him talk at the end of the first movie. It's a complete contradiction, a huge continuity error. Everything he says there is nonsense. It's bullshit. It's fake. It's made up. And it was the point in the movie where I went from just disliking it to hating it. I might have given it a better score had that not been the plot point of the movie, the thing that turned the plot for the movie. My rant is over.
I don't think I think at some point they might be interested in doing a reboot, but this franchise almost seems beyond saving, and it seems beyond trying to make any sense of it. It's just insulting. The whole Bumblebee scene where he speaks and it transforms Optimus Prime. This is just an hour after Bumblebee played a clip from I Don't Fuck With You to communicate with someone, and now his voice is what saves the day. It's just, it's insulting. I hope they stop making these movies in the current line. And if they ever make another Transformers movie, I hope it actually is like maybe a little campy and a little retro and is self-aware, because I think that would be, I could see them doing like a funny Transformers movie, like what they do with 21 Jump Street.
We need Happy Madison to take over the
Fartron
universe. Fartron. Oh, I'm mad now, Optimus Prime.
I think that's the only way this franchise gets saved in any way. Otherwise, I'm very happy and content to lay it to rest with The Last Knight.
They should bury this movie out with all those copies of the Atari ET game in the New Mexico desert, because it fucking sucks. And I remember being excited for the first one in 2007, I think is when it came out. And I did like it, but I can't see the target audience of this movie being excited by this for much longer. And maybe, again, that's why I don't work in the film industry, but this is just too much for me.
So this movie was horrible. And for probably the fourth or fifth time, a reminder that we gave it a combined 13 out of 300. Transformers The Last Knight. I don't care how you watch it, but just a warning, it's a tough movie to get through. However, we are pretty excited about one Transformers property that will be hitting not the silver screen, but the Broadway stage very soon.
You're listening to Pop Radio 105.5 with Trill Ballins in the Morning, the only radio show that fills you up all day long.
All right. Welcome back. It is 9:55 on Wednesday a.m., hope you guys are enjoying Hump Day. I know I am. Hey, we got a special, special day for you. We have a sneak preview of a very special event, a very special promotion that's coming right here. Yes, right here in New York City to Broadway. Brought to you by Ticketblaster and Pepsi Cola. It is Transformers on Broadway. Just listen.
105.5 exclusive. The only radio station that fills you up. How does an android, semi-truck, robot of war, and an Autobot dropped in the middle of a forgotten spot in Cybertron, his components rotten and rusted, grow up to be the hero we all trusted? The way taller, killing robot became a martyr, stuck inside the Hoover Dam to the revenge of the fallen. Finally awoken when Witwicky came a-calling, now he's ready to partner and scheme with Mark Wahlberg.
Optimus Prime. My name is Optimus Prime. And I like to drink Pepsi Cola. Pepsi Cola. Chevy cars.
That's incredible. Andrew Lloyd Webber is a Broadway magician. Music by Lin-Manuel Miranda. I know saying the next Hamilton might be a little too soon, but Transformers on Broadway, folks, buy the tickets now. You don't want to get caught in that spot that people did with Hamilton where they couldn't get tickets.
The puppetry looks amazing. They're doing something similar to The Lion King. Except it's five people operating each Transformer, plus a performer sitting on top of them.
So moving on from Transformers and Broadway to a related topic, and that's bad movies. Next week, we're going to release our bracket for the worst movies of all time. Now, we don't make that decision. It's all up to you, the listeners. The seeds and participants for the worst movie of all time do not come down to who we think belongs in the bracket. It's all up to you. The only thing we can do is nominate some movies and try to convince you to put them in the bracket. So we all picked four movies. Trill, let's start with you. What are your four nominees for worst movie of all time?
Okay, first one, Tucker Max, Hope They Serve Beer in Hell movie. Awful movie, saw it in theaters, went with some bros, totally excited about the movie. They left not liking Tucker Max anymore. That's how bad the movie was. Second movie is Surf Ninjas. This movie's from like the 93 period where both surfing and ninjas were really hot. It's horrible. Rob Schneider has second billing, if that gives you any indication on how good it is. And a Sega Game Gear plays a role in the plot. That was a horrible system, so I didn't like it for that. The third is going to be polarizing. Some people like this movie. I thought it was absolute garb. Speed Racer. Fucking hated that movie. Awful.
That movie sucked.
It has a cult following, too. You might piss some people off with that one.
Yeah, well, I hope I do because it was an awful movie. The only thing it was good for is it's a good tech demo for high definition TVs. It shows you how old I am where I'm still calling them high definition TVs, right? Oh, the kids and their high definition TVs and their 69K and their LD
180p.
180p. So the third movie, Speed Racer, hate that movie. The fourth movie is a movie called The Counselor. This movie was recent. I think it was 2013. Had an all-star lineup. Fassbender was in it. Cameron Diaz was in it. My boy Javier Bardem was in it, who is my personal favorite actor. This movie sucked. The most memorable scene from this entire...
I'm laughing because I know what you're about to say.
The most memorable scene of this movie is Cameron Diaz gets up and fucks the windshield of a car in a pivotal scene in the movie. And it just represents everything that's wrong about an all-star cast being squandered on such a piece of shit. All right. Those are my four guys.
I got pretty cliched. Mine are movies that you expect to be on this list. My number one movie is Jack and Jill. I think that is the definitive worst movie of all time. I think determining bad movie is not as easy as just saying, oh, that one stunk. Like there's things that go into it. There's a reason why we hated the Emoji Movie, or we rated the Emoji Movie worse than Transformers, even though based off our two pods here, I think we might have hated Transformers more. It had so much product placement and it was pointless. And that's the thing with Jack and Jill. Jack and Jill has more product placement than I think almost any movie you'll ever see. In Jack and Jill, Jack's character makes commercials, and that's the excuse to shoehorn in all of the ads. It involves Al Pacino singing a song.
Pacino.
And we will play the clip. I'm going to play it right now. We're going to play the clip right now.
Al Pacino.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
What's my name?
Dunkachino.
It's a whole new game.
Dunkachino.
You want creamy goodness? I'm your friend. Say hello to my chocolate blend. Attica, hoo-ah, lottie light. This whole trial is out of sight. They pull me back in with hazelnut too. Caramel swirl, I know it was you. Everyone wants my Dunkachino. Can't get enough of my Dunkachino. Kids from 7 to 17 lining up for my Dunkachino. What's my name?
Dunkachino.
I Dunkachino.
Say hello to my chocolate blend is a line that I haven't uttered in a Dunkin' Donuts before, but I'm gonna do it soon. Carnival Cruise Lines. I mean, everything is advertised in that movie. It's a cheaply made movie. There's a YouTube channel, Red Letter Media. They break it down where they basically say it's a Ponzi scheme, Happy Madison, that he just pays his friends and spends very little money to make the movie. It was a cheap, offensive movie because they abuse the person seeing the movie by putting commercial after commercial in it. It was upsetting, and I think it is the worst movie of all time. The next two are connected. Batman Forever, which I believe is the one with Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey, right? I mixed them both up. That's the one with the Joker and Two-Face, the Riddler and Two-Face, who are both basically playing the Joker. Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey got their roles as Two-Face and the Riddler, and then just decided to play the Joker, because that's what they do the entire movie. Batman and Robin is my next one. And I think that one is significantly worse than Batman Forever.
Yeah.
That's the Mr. Freeze, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Uma Thurman Poison Ivy movie. I'm just going to read a couple one-liners.
Can we act them out right now? Mr. Freeze, please stop what you're doing. I'm Batman.
All right, everyone. Chill.
No, let's not. Let's go to Arkham Asylum, where you always escape from. Let's go back there.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age.
I don't understand what you're saying. You're just saying things that are kind of like your name, you know?
The Iceman cometh.
That's not really pertinent to the conversation, Mr. Freeze. Let's just go back to Arkham Asylum. Come on.
Stay cool, bird boy.
I'm pretty chill. Pretty good. Let's go, man. We're wasting time.
Let's kick some ice.
No, I want to take you to Arkham Asylum, you dumbass.
And there's some from Batman, too. There's one where he said, this is why Superman works alone. I think there's a Chicks Dig the Car reference. But the best one is when they're bidding on Poison Ivy, Batman pulls out the Bat credit card and says, never leave the cave without it.
I remember that. Imagine Christian Bale's character is like, never leave the cave without it.
Which one was the Val Kilmer one?
Fucking American Express, back card.
Rachel!
Val Kilmer was forever.
I mean, I loved him as a kid, I have to admit. I loved those movies. That was Batman to me. And then you grow up and you just realize they're insufferable. And the last movie I have here is a movie that I think we should cancel the worst movie of all time bracket if this one doesn't make it, and that's Battlefield Earth with John Travolta.
Yes.
Battlefield Earth was a book turned into a movie that was written by L. Ron Hubbard, the inventor of Scientology, and that is maybe the least ridiculous thing about it. And I didn't want to go into it too much because it truly is just – it's awful. I am determined that when we do one of our first movie commentaries, we do Battlefield Earth, because if you haven't seen it, you have to watch it at least once, because it is so funny that it defines a movie being so bad that it's good. It is hilarious. It is so terrible.
First movie to be filmed diagonally too.
Yeah. Yes, there
the
is
angles on that movie are so bad.
There are so many weird angles in that movie. It is truly it's a classic. And for so many reasons, from the fact that it's a Scientology movie, basically, to the lines delivered by John Travolta. So those are my four: Jack and Jill, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, and Battlefield Earth. Ken, Jack, what are your four nominees?
So I'm going to start out with Avatar, the Last Airbender movie, the live action version. And I think all three of us are fans of the animated one. Like, it's pretty very solid show. When I heard they're making a live action version, I was like immediately very mad, because I knew it was going to be a sack of shit, which it is. It's just like terribly acted, and it's the plot line is like nonsensical throughout, and like they kind of like I don't think the person who did the screen, I don't know who wrote, did the screenplay, but I don't think they actually watched the show, because one of the pivotal scenes is in it is they go to like a concentration camp for earthbenders, who's like their sole power in the universe is that they can like move rocks and like throw them around and shit, and their like prison camp is in a quarry, and it makes zero fucking sense, because like it's there's just a lot of things like that throughout the movie where it's like almost as if they didn't understand anything about Avatar. My next one is The Happening, which I'm surprised didn't make it on either of your list. It's just the absolute worst movie of all time.
Another M. Night Shyamalan movie. You're really ragging on M. Night here.
Yeah, I'm not a huge M. Night fan. Philly's finest. It's just so bad throughout. And again, the one part that really stands out to me is the scene where he's trying to convince the lady whose house they're at that they're like not there to hurt him or hurt her. And he's like, oh no, we would never want to hurt you, almost as if he's being sarcastic. And then also talking to plants. My next one on the list is Jumper, which for me, it was like kind of validation that everyone would always say after Star Wars, Hayden Christensen isn't that bad. He's like, he's good. It's just clunky script. And then I watched that movie, and it's like a relatively cool concept. Like, you can teleport and shit everywhere. And he's really bad, like awful. And again, no sexual chemistry with the female lead and just no emotion whatsoever. And after this movie, he became like a farmer and quit acting altogether.
So that's my, that's definitely in my top tier.
Show some respect. Rachel Bilson is the female lead, aka Summer on the OC. 2000,
she was very
2005, man. That, like, she was it. So I had high hopes for this movie. I didn't hate it quite as much as you, but Hayden Christensen, corn cob, basically a corn cob on the screen.
As he slowly shrinks into a corn cob. My most hated movie, and it's the only one I'm really going to rail on, is Highlander 2. And if you haven't seen Highlander 1, the basic plot is that it's these people are on Earth and they can live forever. And by the end of time, they all need to like kill each other. Like the tagline of the movie is there can only be one. And the Highlander 2 takes place in the future, and they just kind of like went off base with like the entire plot line of the first one. Like they ignored it completely. So instead of them being all these people on Earth that live forever and were born as humans, they were now banished from another planet called Zeist, and they were banished to Earth for leading a failed rebellion. The main character, Christopher Lambert and Sean Connery. So they get banished to Earth. And then eventually the main character, Connor McLeod, makes like an ozone, fake ozone layer that's run by like a corporation. And like they try and tie in this whole environmentalist plot and everything, but it's just, it's so bad. And it's just like, it contradicted the first one in every single way possible. And after the fact, I looked up the movie and it turned out that they, the Bond company for the movie had taken over because they went over budget, and they just threw out the entire script and just went nuts on their own. Which explains a lot of it, but it's still, I think, beyond just like effects and fight scenes and everything being so shitty, it's just the plot line is so bad and the acting is terrible too.
Solid lists, gentlemen. Solid lists.
Those are some pretty good lists. Let's run them down again, because remember, you guys listening right now, you're the ones that will nominate the movies, the final movies that make the list. Our say in this is minimal to none. Trill, what were your four again?
Let me just say, I believe my list is the thinking man's list. If you want a little more cerebral of an option, my list is good. I got Tucker Max, Hope They Serve Beer in Hell, Surf Ninjas, Speed Racer, and The Counselor.
Mine are Jack and Jill, Batman Forever, and Batman and Robin, and finally Battlefield Earth.
And I have The Last Airbender, The Happening, Jumper, and Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Yes, I was like, so you got to say the subtitle, because fucking awesome.
So those are our bad movies. Those are our nominees. Take some deep thought on these. Let us know what you think the worst movies of all time are, and we will start our bracket during our next podcast. Guys, another week in the books. Go watch Transformers The Last Night. Watch Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Or fart into a Pringles can and just shove it up to your nose.
That's actually the title of a new Adam Sandler movie.
Oh, I farted into a Pringles can. Oh, you farted in the Pringles can?
What you farting into the Pringles can?
Oh, you little Pringles can, you fart? You sniff of the fart?
Thank you for listening to Lights Movie Podcast this week. Go out and see some movies. Tweet us your reviews, your thoughts, and a reminder to tweet us your worst movie of all time nominees this week. This message goes out to all directors and studio heads in Hollywood. Stop cucking Brendan Fraser.
Everybody, welcome. This is the first official concept meeting for Transformers 6, or as we like to call it here at corporate, the Decepticon Conference.
It gets better every year, boss.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. All right, lay it on me.
So this rendition, I'm thinking we move on from Mark Wahlberg and focus on, you know, more of an external threat to Earth instead of some ancient one that we usually do. I also think we should probably begin to stress a little more on, you know, character development and screenwriting. They're pretty important. What's happening? Where am I going? Where am I going? What is happening? Where am I going?
Oh, all right. Well, now that shit's out of the way, Who has an actual good idea worth anything of value? Terry, what about you?
Okay, so hear me out, fellas. Basically, we do the same exact plot as the last Transformers movie, except this time, the Transformers are much hornier.
Holy shit, Terry. Terry, get out of here and pack up your office, because you are now our new creative director.